We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Oh my goodness, they come and they go with almost clock-like regularity. About every year and a half, they come. Promise Keepers, Way Down Workshop, Prayer of Jabez, Purpose-Driven Life, What Would Jesus Do? The fads, big and small. Some of them stick around and actually become heresies in time. The church's history is littered with that kind of a thing. But why is the church in America so fad-driven? Well, yesterday I had an opportunity to speak with Issues Etc. regular guest Terry Mattingly. Terry is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and author of a weekly column for the Scripps Howard News Service. His latest column is titled Nailing the Evangelical Fads. I began the interview by asking Terry, all these fads, why are they so popular in American Christianity?
Well, I think it's safe to say that we live in a culture that's dominated by pop culture and mass media. So the forms of religious expression that would seem to go along best with those would, in some sense, be popular. Whether they have staying power is an entirely different question. I mean, so I like to tell my students we live in a nation where lots and lots of people have the attention span of hummingbirds on cocaine, in that it's just not going to work to try to sell them long, linear, thought-out, doctrinal information. They're into something, and they want it to work now. They want it to, you know, want to do it right now. It's got to be popular right now. It's got to feel good right now. That is our culture, and to some degree, that's the way we also think about church. The other half of the answer is a little bit more direct and focused, instead of wandering around like that. And it's this: we live in the post-denominational age. Denominations, for the most part, exist to advocate something that you would think of either as a tradition with a small t or a large t. When we go into the post-denominational age, where massive amounts of American Christianity is going to churches that are totally independent, or they're in the free church tradition, or they're in churches that are still a part of a denomination, but they may as well not be, you shouldn't expect those people to think of faith in terms of traditions that flow from generation to generation. It's what's working right now. Thus, we get the fads.
But historic Christianity, I'm sure you would agree, is long, linear, doctrinal. Are these people getting the real deal? I mean, not to say whether or not these people as individuals are Christians, but are they getting the real deal?
Well, I mean, you're talking to a guy here, of course. You may remember I was raised Southern Baptist, and I'm now Eastern Orthodox. So, I mean, I've gone from one side of this to the other. I tell people I go to a multimedia church. We just don't use electricity.
and don't I mean, need so, it either.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if the power goes out, you just light more candles. But it's still, it's a multimedia sensory church, and that is an ancient form of tradition. It's just we happen to be using a service that essentially has been the same since the 6th century. For us, new music is something from the 16th or 17th, you know, not whatever came out, you know, from Zondervan or from a pop publishing house within the last 3 or 4 weeks. So to some degree, you're asking me a question on which I have demonstrated extreme prejudice. Let me just put it this way. I think the ancient churches have this train of the ancient faith that has gone from generation to generation. But for some reason, our ancient churches have tended to think that it was no longer their duty to invite people to be on that train. Meanwhile, the evangelicals have mastered the art of selling tickets to the train. But I would argue that, from my perspective, they don't have the train. Does that make sense?
Maybe the train just stopped in the station permanently.
Well, no, it's a new train. It's planes, it's hovercrafts, it's lasers, it's all kinds of things. I mean, if you could beam me up by Scotty, I'm sure churches would be attempting that method of tradition, just that quick, get it done. So, I mean, so you have two totally different approaches to church. One is essentially preserve the faith from generation to generation, and those churches have lost the ability to engage people where they are now and invite them to be converted into that faith. I mean, Catholic, you know, Catholic evangelism is like, what, jumbo shrimp? I mean, military intelligence, genuine walnut veneer. I mean, to some degree, those words no longer make sense in a lot of liturgical American Christianity, whether it be Lutheran, Anglican, Orthodox, Catholic, or whatever. Meanwhile, the megachurch people are great at talking to American culture in terms of right now, this decision, this technique, this is what you need to do today. But then, you know, that church may be gone in 20 years. The church you baptize your children in, 30 years later, the pastor will have moved on. The building may have been turned into a roller rink, and you know, and they're off doing something new, right? It's two totally different ways of thinking about church.
You know, your short list of the non-denominational, I think you left out Lutheran, because a lot of Lutherans have opted for exactly that big box church.
Well, approach. I'm aware of that. That falls in the category of people who are a part of a denomination, but they may as well not be. You know, I mean, there. You know, you can get plasma screens in rock bands, you know, with laser shows in a wide variety of settings today.
Is the fad-drivenness of American Christianity a symptom of a bigger syndrome?
Well, I have argued ever since the early 90s when I began teaching at Denver Seminary. I've argued that essentially our mass media culture, with all of its niches, with all of its entertainment, with its short attention span, that to some degree that has soaked into the church by osmosis. And we don't know, it's the air we breathe, it's the water we swim in, and we don't even see that culture anymore because it's just us. We've become a part of it, and it then influences our church more than we even realize.
Tell us a little bit about Joe Carter. You write a bit about him in your column lately.
Well, that, I was writing, and if people go to tmat.net and see the version of the column that's there, there's a link to his actual manifesto. Well, hey, yeah, Lutheran reference. I said he nailed his manifesto to the cyber door of a site called Culture 11. Carter is an evangelical's evangelical. I mean, this is a guy out of the heart of a number of evangelical institutions, everything from World Magazine to being the issues coordinator for the presidential campaign of Mike Huckabee. This is not a guy who hates evangelicals or something. This is a guy who, after watching this culture for a number of years, finally sat down and went, I'm scared about the following trends. You know, and he wrote this article that if this article had been written by me, you know, as a convert to Eastern Orthodoxy or a Catholic or something, people would have considered it to be pretty viciously anti-evangelical. Except it's not. I wish I could have run more of his words in the column, and that's why I linked to it at my own site, something I can't do in a daily newspaper. But I hope people will go and read his article for themselves. Go to tmat.net. It's a top column right now, the February 23rd column.
Is that a light at the end of the tunnel in which this kind of non-train of American Christianity is traveling?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just another sign that evangelicalism is a community of communities, you know, and that you have so many different options within it. I mean, the word evangelical now gets used to describe everything from a political affiliation to Catholics who go to Bible study once a week. I mean, it's nobody knows what the word means anymore. And so I think Joe is, you know, I think there are tons of thoughtful evangelicals, and I frankly think there are people who are evangelicals now in a wide array of traditions. I mean, we're seeing a resurgence of low church evangelical Protestantism within the Anglican tradition, for example, in the Third World Church. In the Missouri Synod context, we're seeing a renewed emphasis simultaneously in liturgy, in ancient expressions of, not ancient, let's say older expressions of Lutheranism. Yet at the same time, those are some of the people whose theology could in one sense be called evangelical in terms of doctrinal content, but then you go over to somewhere else and you have Lutherans that look totally different, and they're probably calling themselves evangelicals because their church looks more like a megachurch. Does that make sense? One's the doctrinal content, and the other's the cultural social form, right? That's pretty inside baseball there for Lutherans, but I think you know what I'm talking about in terms of the debates within the Missouri Synod. So we're seeing this in a host of different settings. I think Carter is a thoughtful, good journalist and reporter who did a remarkable job of observing some trends and then offering his personal take on it. So that's why I wrote about it.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, author of the book Pop Goes Religion, has his thumb squarely on the pulse of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I've never heard someone nail it as well as he has, and I've tried many, many times. He also writes a column, a weekly column for the Scripps Hour's Nude Service, and his latest column is titled Nailing the Evangelical Fads. You can read this column and an article that I've written titled The Fad-Driven Church, written some years ago, but it still holds up, at issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page, issuesetc.org. Terry, thank you very much.
Hey, talk to you again soon.
You know what I've discovered about the fad-driven church? I've spent a number of years looking at the fads, and then even more interestingly, looking at the church that rides the waves of these fads like a surfer, just keeps on going out for the next wave, can't get enough of it. When one wave dies out and he finds himself beached, he picks up his surfboard, runs back out, and tries to find the next wave. He's always hoping that the next wave will really get him where he wants to go, but it never does. It's just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and every wave eventually dies off, just like every fad. Well, you know what I've discovered that's even more interesting than the fads themselves? The fact that the fad-driven church will defend to the teeth not so much the fad, because the fad-driven church knows as well as anyone else that the fad will someday fade away. They will defend to the teeth their fad-drivenness, their willingness to keep on going out there and find that next wave that they think will take them where they want to go. And what is left behind? The truth. We'll be right back with Dr. Stephen Hine.
Worth more than gold, and my eyes have pleasure to behold your my latest and my greatest, my latest, my greatest inspiration.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Lucy, now is she alive and well?
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Answers in Genesis Ministry.
Did you know that our supposed human ancestor, Lucy, may actually possibly be living today? This could be another one of those many embarrassing discoveries for evolutionists. You see, villagers on the island of Sumatra have reported seeing an ape-like creature in the jungles. It's described as tailless, short-haired and ape-like, about 4'6" tall, and it walks sort of upright. You know, from casts of its footprint, each foot had four toes in an almost straight row with a fifth big toe jutting to one side. It just happens that the descriptions and sketches of this creature bear a striking resemblance to those of the Australopithecines, such as Lucy, the famous supposed ancestor of ours. You know, if this creature in the jungle turned out to be real, it would cause chaos in evolution's ranks. You see, the Australopithecines allegedly became extinct millions of years ago. I have a sure faith in God's word. That doesn't change. For those who put their trust in man's theories, which change all the time, they must have a very unsettling faith.
Well, what about dinosaurs? You know, many evolutionists use them to try to challenge the faith of Christians. You may be surprised at what the Bible has to say about dinosaurs. Read Ken Ham's 48-page booklet on dinosaurs, and you'll have answers to defend your faith. As we close out the week, we'll send 10 of them to you for your donation of any amount. Call toll-free at 1-888-89-ANSWERS.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our communities, check us out, Brothers of John the Steadfast, www.steadfastlutherans.com.